This is perfect. It's 4 days. It's about whatever, 60, 70 kilometers. I'm like, I could probably do that in a day. But so I don't calculate things. I don't calculate, oh, I've got 30, 40, 20 kilometers left, and I'm not focused on the numbers. More really focused on the feeling of, okay, well, just move forward. And okay, there's not much left, so maybe I can push harder. Well, I got no more push, so just move forward. And the thing is, when we were doing our expedition yesterday, you know, at some point I'm like, we're not going back. I don't want to cross that crane wall again and wind and not see the trail. And you know, you're like, we can't go back.
The point of no return.
Yeah. Once after the first, I think 15 or 20 kilometers, to me it was like, no, we can't really turn back.
Hey, say something in Spanish so it sounds very genuine,
like very?
So I can prove to my listeners that I'm in Argentina and South America. You can talk.
Como te llamas?
Yeah, just talk to each other.
Hey, culiao.
Hey, culiao. ¿Qué es lo que andas haciendo?
No hablamos así, boludo.
Vida en la Patagonia. No es fácil de llevar. Y el viento sopla fuerte. El cañado.
All right, guys, welcome to this edition of the NEDA podcast, your favorite podcast. My name is Hans, and I am the host of this this whole project. And interesting week. A lot of things have happened again. The coronavirus is really affecting the world and this podcast as well. I am actually cutting my trip to Patagonia short, and I'm on my way back to Norway. And that's why I'm at this airport, and I'm actually going to spend the night here. And that's why I'm killing some time with editing this podcast and doing this intro for you guys from here. All right, so this episode, guys, this episode is a chat I had with René Hamel the day after we finished the Umul circuit in one day. This circuit, or it's actually a 4-day hike or trek that we did, and we decided to do in one day. And the day after, we met up in my hostel in Shelton, and we talked about the whole thing. We talked about the day we had, where we ran for 14 hours and 3 minutes and 10 seconds. I think that's the official time. And the official registration for the fastest known time is, you can find it in the show notes. I've put a link in the show notes. It's on the fastestknowntime.com website. And speaking of fastest known times, this coronavirus is affecting a lot of races out there. As you might know, I was going to do the UTMF, the Ultra Trail Mount Fuji in Japan. That's cancelled. Now I decided to do the Transvulcania race in May. I'm kind of assuming that's going to be cancelled too, so I'm putting that whole thing on hold, and I'm kind of not expecting to do any races in the near future. And I think most of my fellow ultra runners out there and listeners, you're thinking the same. And maybe this episode will will light a spark in the FKT mind of yours, and maybe you can find a trail or something that that you're fascinated by and you want to go and use your fitness for trying to set a fastest known time or a speed record on some a cool trail, just like me and René did. Yeah, so this this podcast, it's the first half is kind of like a recap of the whole expedition, and the next half we get to know René, and we go a little bit deeper into her her life and why she runs, and her we go pretty deep in some stuff. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna spend the night here, so I'm gonna prepare a pretty cool song for you guys. So if you stick around for the outro, I'll give a I think I'm gonna do a pretty cool mix of, do you remember Lou Bega's Mambo Number 5 back in the 90s? Yeah, I'm gonna do a remix for you guys where I'm gonna mix in the names of every single one of you who support this project and podcast through my Patreon channel. So yeah, that's how I'm gonna show my love for you guys. As you might know, this project and podcast is crowdfunded, and yeah, that's how I make a living, traveling around, doing FKTs, racing, interviewing people like René and climbers, ultra runners, outdoors enthusiasts, people with cool stories. And that's, yeah, let's stop the intro right now, and let's get on with the interview and the recap of the Umul Circuit FKT that me and René Hamel set last week. All right? Bye-bye.
Say something?
Yeah. What did you have for breakfast?
What do you think I had?
Oats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Overnight oats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm kind of getting tired of eating that now.
Yeah? Okay, so what's your go-to recipe for overnight oats?
Well, ideally I would put my chia seeds, hemp seeds, and flaxseed.
Okay.
With the oats.
Yeah.
Maybe some cinnamon. Or ginger.
Yeah.
Dried fruits. Nuts.
What about cardamom?
Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah,
yeah, I've done that too, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's my favorite spice.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's more expensive for us, that spice. I put it in might cookies be. Sometimes.
Yeah? All right. We have started our podcast. Welcome to the NEDA podcast. How do you pronounce your name?
René.
René. And you are from?
Canada.
Canada. And before we get into our conversation, let's just explain to the listeners why there's some guitars in the background and some Spanish-speaking guys. Where are we at?
El Chalten.
El Chalten, Argentina. We're sitting outside of my hostel and right by the main street. So we're watching trekkers go by. Some cars are driving by, so it's a very authentic episode, I would say. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're here to talk about, I think, what we did yesterday, mainly, and maybe we'll get to know you a little better, your background, and let's just have a conversation about everything that comes into mind, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, who are you, René?
I was born in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And I moved to Quebec. I've been there, I guess, for 10 years. I moved there for skiing. And then I discovered trail running in 2010. And since then, I've been,
well, doing you skipped a lot of things. Because we got to know each other quite good yesterday.
Yeah.
So I know your story, but let's pretend I don't know it. So don't just jump into trail running. Let's start from the beginning. Okay.
So I guess from Quebec, from moving to Ottawa to Quebec, that's when I stopped university and I started tree planting for maybe 10 years, tree planting, and I lived in close to Quebec City. I did tree planting. After that, when I got separated from a relationship, I moved to Quebec City, and then I started working for Post Canada as a letter carrier. And then,
so you're a post woman?
I'm a post woman, yeah. I deliver letters and parcels. So after, I'm still working there for Post Canada. And then I moved to Quebec City, especially for the cross-country skiing, because I knew there was a lot of cross-country skiing there. So I got into cross-country skiing a little bit more. I had done some in university, and then I did some more. And I did some, I trained, I guess, for the Cascinada Lopet in Gatineau.
And what is that? Is it's, that like a long, super long cross-country racer?
Well, there's a 25 kilometer and a 50 kilometer race. So I did the 50 kilometer. And I did that a few times. And yeah, I did a few other competitions of cross-country skiing. And after another separation, then I got more into performance, training a lot more, being very more strict or rigid with everything. So I started performing more. I enjoyed that. And that lasted for maybe 1 or 2 years of the ski season. And after I got fed up because I went maybe too far from my limits of what I could handle there. And then I got maybe more normal after I got fed up. I stopped for a bit. And then I got back into it, and I discovered trail running.
So let's dig a little bit deeper here. You went deep into it. It's pretty normal for ultra runners to go deep into stuff. Do you agree on that statement?
Yeah. Running in general, I think, especially maybe more road running, people can be really conscious about the numbers, wanting to run faster after they do a 10 kilometer, maybe they do a half marathon, then a marathon. And we can find that maybe in trail running also, always wanting a bigger goal. And then after the bigger goal, you want maybe another bigger goal, or a better performance, or
run longer every time.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. It's always like, okay, now I did a 50K, and now I'm gonna do a 50 miles. I wanna do 50 miles. I wanna do a 100 miles. So it's pretty normal, I think.
Yeah. And also, I guess. But for me now, I mean, the most I've ran was 125 kilometers, and I don't feel the need, or I'm not rushed to do maybe 160 or, for me, 100 kilometers, depending where it can be super long, could take me 25 hours, and I could do 125 kilometers in 17 hours. So I guess it depends on the course.
It really does. And what we did yesterday was 75Ks, approximately. We spent 14 hours and 22 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And that, some people can run 100 miles in that time. So yeah, it's not about the distance, right? It's about the time on feet.
Yeah. And that's where you see the technical part of the terrain. I was less comfortable on certain descents, that it was really scrambly or sandy.
Okay, let's get into that, and we'll get back to your background eventually. What did we do yesterday?
We ran and we walked for 14 hours.
the circuit we did is called the Uemul circuit.
Yeah. Right?
The Uemul, which is spelled with the H, with the silent H, it's like a Huemul. is the Umul is an animal. It's like a deer. And the circuit we did is called the Umul circuit, and it's about 70 kilometers long. You're supposed to do it by trekking. 4 days, right? It's a 4 day trek.
Yeah.
And we decided to do it in 1 day.
Yeah.
And see how fast we could go, or see how long it took to
cover it.
Yeah. I think we should go inside where there's no wind, because it's going to affect the other quality. So let's go inside.
Sure.
Okay, we moved. We changed locations, and we can actually still hear the guitar outside.
Yeah.
We're in the reception of the hostel. It's the hostel is actually, they call it the Climbers Hostel. And when I checked into my room, they said right before you, or the day before, three extremely famous climbers stayed there. And I asked them, was it Alex Honnold? And they said, no, it was three Italian climbers. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get to see them?
It's a place for people that want to stay here for a long time. So I'm going to stay here for over a month or something. We'll see.
Excellent. And you got to see the climbers?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No. Anyways, we were just about to get into our run yesterday.
4 day trek.
The 4 day trek, which we did in 1 day. Yeah, the Umul circuit. It's about 75 or 70 kilometers with 3,500 meters of gain, right?
Three. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. And should we maybe get into like the details of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like
what I remember of it.
Yeah, yeah. So we started at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But let's start with the preparations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what kind of research did we do? What kind of gear did we bring? What did we maybe forget about? What would we do if we would do it again? Like some lessons learned, things we remember. And let's do that.
Yeah.
So, first of all, how did we meet and how did we come up with this?
We met at the camping.
Yeah.
And when I found out that you were an ultra runner, I'm like, wow, that's cool. It's the first one I meet on my trip to Patagonia. And I had heard about the trek, Humo, a few times. And then I started hearing more about it, more people doing it. And I'm like, this is perfect. It's 4 days. It's about, 60, 70 kilometers. I'm like, I could probably do that in a day. And I guess from what I had heard, it's maybe less popular, not flagged or necessarily as much as other tracks. Mm-hmm.
In this area or in Patagonia in general?
I guess maybe in this area. And what I've seen also is Torres del Paine. That's my only comparison.
Yeah.
So I told myself, I don't want to do this alone. I don't want to do this alone, get lost or I don't know what. And I had done the O circuit. That was my big goal.
What is the O circuit?
Yeah, the O circuit in Torres del Paine. It's 120 kilometers about.
Mm-hmm.
And
you did that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
When I found out that you were a runner, I'm like, wow, maybe he would do it with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Long story short, we ended up doing it. We decided to do it maybe 2 days after we decided to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Checking the weather.
'Cause the weather can get quite harsh here. So I wanted to know for certain that the weather was going to be good. But still, we ended up like running in pretty extreme weather for the first hours, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, extreme for what I know. Here, it seems to be like normal weather for them,
yeah,
as it can change so fast. But yeah, it was a pretty extreme after right at the beginning. Well, pretty much after maybe 2 hours, it started to rain and it was windy and kind of cold. And I was questioning, I'm like, maybe if it's like this for 10 hours, I'm going to get cold or it's going to be hard.
Yeah, and we're crossing a ice cold river. And it started to rain and started to wind, so getting super cold.
Yeah. But before that, talk about what you brought in your bag.
Let's talk about our preparations, because I've gotten pretty, what would you call, notorious, or I take my precautions, safety precautions.
Very.
Yeah.
That's good.
Especially after my last accident.
Yeah.
My listeners know everything about that, because I smashed my face and I had a full monologue episode about the incident.
Yeah.
Especially for my Norwegian speaking listeners.
Yeah.
They know everything about it. I decided to bring a spot tracker. So, and I sent the live link to some friends. I sent it to the people that work in the hostel.
Yeah.
So they could see if I was going to make it before midnight or not, you know?
Yeah.
I brought first aid kit, a passport. I brought rainproof and windproof pants, Gore-Tex jacket, and gloves, a hat, 50 SPF sunscreen. I brought a space blanket, like a survival blanket. I brought, let's see here, we had to bring a harness. Yeah, I packed everything in a like a dry sack, so it would keep dry. We had to bring a harness. We had to bring two carabiners and a safety rope to actually utilize the zip lines across the river crossings. And we had to bring food.
Yeah.
Food was a big aspect because we didn't actually know how much time we would spend.
Yeah.
So I brought more than we needed. I took some advice from you. I boiled some potatoes, salted them, boiled some eggs. And I brought four bananas and I bought some bars. Because there's no sports gels or bars you can find in El Chalten. It's just it's pretty boring stuff here. So real food pretty much all the way.
Yeah.
Which was amazing.
Yeah. Because it's so long and we're not moving fast.
Yeah.
Especially you, not fast.
What else? Did I forget something?
Your bars.
I think that's it for the equipment. And we talked about it when we were entering Chalten at night when we came back. The only thing we forgot was actually cash.
Yeah.
I brought passport and a credit card, but no bailout cash.
Yeah.
So that's the only takeaway.
Yeah.
Because if something was to happen, then, I don't know. Maybe we can bribe some people.
That's what I was thinking too.
And for let's also say that it's a 4-day trek, which means there are three camps, like overnight camp spots.
Yeah.
And since it's a national park, they really urge you to use those camp spots.
Mm-hmm.
When we were going to do it, we had to sign this super strict form.
Lots of things to agree.
We had to tell them all about our insurance. We had to sign a lot of disclaimers, and make sure that we're not going to litter anything in the park.
Yeah.
But since there are these campsites, we also discovered there are shelters or bivouacs.
Yeah.
So if we were to really screw up, we could actually stay warm or dry
in a shelter. Yeah,
so that's a takeaway as well. Like, if we're gonna do it again, maybe you could bring like a super light I don't know, a sleeping bag or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you want to do some other experiments in the area,
yeah,
you could use these shelters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it for gear and, yeah, and stuff. Did you bring any other things that were...
your bananas. Did you say your bananas?
Yeah, okay. I said bananas. What did you bring of food?
Three eggs, three potatoes... And croissants. I went to the bakery and I got some leftover croissants with jam in them.
I was thinking about that because you're French Canadian, but are you like French as in you eat croissants? And do you have the French culture, or do you just speak French?
I just speak French. We have some of the French culture with, I guess, croissants and baguette.
And cheese?
Yeah, cheese also. Yeah, in Quebec, a lot more of all that than where I was born in Ottawa or Ontario.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we decided to start at 7 in the morning and we calculated. I bought a map before this adventure, and on the map, it was like on the lines for each day, it said... It's going to take you 12 hours and 6 hours from A to B or B to C. And we just decided to cut that in half.
Yeah.
All right, so we added up all the hours, ended up being 30 hours.
Yeah.
And we just said, okay, let's just estimate that we're going to spend 15 hours.
Yeah.
And we spent 14 hours.
Yeah.
Right. So pretty spot on.
I even thought maybe 12 hours because I'm like... 65 kilometers. I've already done that in 8 hours, but it was clearly not possible for me in 12 hours.
No. And we brought headlamps.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Backup. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you had your phone. You had the map in your phone and in your watch.
And on my watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the big guidance. You were the leader, my leader.
That's right. Okay, so that's it for preparations. If anyone is gonna do the Umol trek, I think this is the minimum you should bring.
Yeah.
Right. If you're gonna do it in one day, should we urge other people to do it in one day?
I would say, you see, I wouldn't do it alone.
No.
I would say do it with someone else. And before doing this, at least you've ran the experience of running at night or running 20 hours in a row. Not because I've done 60 kilometers that I can go do that. 60 kilometers that took me 6 hours, I wouldn't necessarily jump into that. And, you know, all the aspect of mountaineering, well, that comes in handy.
All those forms we had to sign, they were there for a reason.
And
right?
To read them.
Read them. We kind of skimmed through them, thinking like, we'll make it. We're experienced mountaineers.
Exactly.
I felt pretty safe, but you had some experiences, right? You.
At one point when we were going down and when it was really windy, I just... kind of followed you. I didn't look up too much because I'm thinking my hat's gonna fly off or I'm gonna fly off the mountain. But so orientation, that's important also.
Yeah.
Being able to orient ourselves and use the phone or the GPS watch. We have to be experienced or comfortable doing that.
Yeah, and let's talk about all the kind of terrains we had to traverse, and what did we experience there? We started with asphalt. We entered the park, and then there's kind of an easy gravel, right?
Yeah.
And then we start going up, and then we enter a forest, pretty soft forest. We got lost. For about 20 minutes. So we didn't get lost, but we went off track.
Yeah,
on like
on
some
a different
some,
trail.
Some like the thing is, these trails are so mixed in with cow trails. Cow trails are dangerous because they look like they're man-made trails.
Yeah.
but they're not.
No.
So we followed them. We got off course. We got back onto the course, into the forest, and then we came up. I think we hit the tree line.
Yeah.
We got down to the valley, and we saw this amazing rainbow.
Yeah.
And we're kind of running into the rainbow.
Yeah, yeah. We saw really both ends, like the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. And then with the rainbow came the rain.
Yeah.
In the flatlands, and by the, it was like, we're running in the valley. And in the valley was a river, and we followed the river, ice cold river.
Yeah.
And in the we knew this, but like the base of the river was, of course, the glacier.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Up on top of the valley. Like,
exactly.
Up in the mountains. And that's where we ended up. And that's where we kind of did the first serious river crossing.
Yeah.
And so we had to decide, here we can take the zip line, or we can actually walk, or what's it called? Is it called wade in English?
Oh, I'm not sure.
If you walk in a steep river, yeah?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that term.
No, okay. But we could actually, if the water was shallow, we could actually manage to walk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We tried. And then the second crossing of river seemed...
No, let's talk about this first.
Yeah.
Because we tried, but we didn't make it. We returned... And then we did the zip line.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. Let's talk about the zip line.
But I mean, there was like two
parts of that
river. Yeah. To cross. Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we tried. We didn't make it. It was too much water. And because of the rain. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And too dangerous. Well, not maybe for me, definitely not enough experience to read how big is the current.
Mm. And it was super cold.
Yeah, very cold.
Easy to freak out.
Oh,
because
yeah.
It was like 100 meters from the glacier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You really, yeah, we really saw a difference between that water and more in the valley.
Yeah. If the listener is annoyed by the noise in the background, it's the janitor just letting people know. Okay, so we had to take the zip line, and we had to use our harness. And
teeny tiny harness.
Yeah. I got to borrow a harness from my friend, Tommy. It was like this super light harness. Too light to really feel really safe, you know?
It was like, yeah, but by looking at it and the whole construction, it was good. And it's smaller than a grapefruit, eh?
Yeah, like
almost
like
my avocado. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, we put that on and we clipped ourselves onto the zip line and just pulled ourselves over the river.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And it was the first time I had done that experience, doing zip line, and I was happy that there was other people. Because when hands crossed, then I was alone. But I wasn't alone. There was other people that helped me to put the harness or... Because, you know, you want to make sure you put it on right and that you don't fall. How deep? How... It was, what, 10, 20 meters from a really tumultuous big water river?
Yeah. I mean, the consequences of falling, I would say, would be certain death.
Yeah. For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We knew that.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty dangerous stuff. Okay, so after the water crossing, we were filled with adrenaline and what was kind of on the plate was a huge glacier. And we didn't actually have to cross the glacier. We just kind of shaved it.
Yes, yeah.
Wouldn't you say we shaved the glacier?
Yeah, we're pretty much... at the end of it.
Yep. Yeah.
At the
base of it.
Yeah, yeah. On the right, we had the glacier. On the left, there was a crane or, I don't know, that kind of rock. Or
yeah. It's like pretty steep landslide.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we...
And no marking. That's one spot that I didn't see much trail marking.
No, at all.
It was really... You had to just pick your way or whatever seemed best.
Yeah. So, okay, let's paint the picture here. We're kind of in this steep valley where on the left we had the mountain, on the right we had the glacier.
Yeah, two glaciers,
yeah. Yeah. And so we're running like in the middle, and suddenly we had to take a left up to a pass.
Yes.
Right, super steep.
Yeah.
And then kind of connect
on. Bit of scrambling,
super steep. And then after a while, we made our way up to like a real pass.
Yeah.
Right. So on to like the next chapter of the trail. And we got up to that pass, and when we got up there was this kind of plateau with a huge ice field.
Yeah.
Like endless ice. Yeah. Endless ice. And how would you describe the ice?
It was pretty spectacular to come up, and then there was at that point nobody around us, so that's kind of fun to be alone to view something like that. And yeah, you come up and you arrive and you see a huge glacier, and it almost looks like in the sky. Or there's at the end, on one side of the glacier, there was like super white mountains, not super high, but and wind.
I was kind of picturing it, you know, when you're in an airplane.
Yeah.
And you look down,
exactly.
And there's like this endless snowy mountains.
Exactly.
You're probably very familiar with this from Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt like I was in that landscape.
Yeah,
that you look
true.
From the plane.
Yeah,
you're
good
alone
point.
And you're, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Something, yeah, that I had never seen like that.
How many people do you think we encountered on the whole run?
Oh, wow, good question.
Maybe 20?
Yeah.
20
yeah.
people?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe 30, but yeah, around that.
Yeah.
Around that. It's funny because we would catch people, like some people in their... We caught up to the people in the day two.
Yeah.
And then day three also. And even day four. Day four, we saw people at the end.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
The day four people was a Chilean couple.
Yeah.
And they were taking the zip line over the last river crossing.
Exactly.
And I wonder how late they got into Chalten, because we got in at like 10 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
And they were...
walking with big bags.
Yeah, big bags. So I'm guessing they were here at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, unless they slept somewhere along the way, maybe.
Yeah, maybe they had like a fifth night.
Yeah.
Because they have a tent and probably some food, so why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the circuit is actually, I wouldn't say it's a circuit, because officially it ends not at the same place as you started.
Exactly.
So if you want to make it a circuit, you have to run back to Chalten and take some unofficial trails.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
So
find your way back.
Find your way back.
Like you did.
Yeah. But I think that's the only kind of the correct way of doing it if you want to set an FKT. As we did.
Yeah.
We actually set, I would say it's an unofficial FKT, because the official is, it's some guy in a sports store just told me he knew of some person who did it in 18 hours. And we did it in 14. So
yeah,
I guess that's kind of how the legend goes. I really like that.
Yeah.
When just people say, yeah, a guy did it in 18 hours. It's not about 18 hours and 6 minutes and 12 seconds. It's 18 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Because at first I thought it was going to take maybe 12. So I felt kind of bad that I was making you stay in there longer than expected. And then when you told me that someone else, the fastest time it was 18 hours, it kind of made me feel like, okay, it's not so bad.
I don't even know who that guy is. It's just a guy.
Yeah.
And it could have been a fast, super fast trekker.
Yeah.
Or it could have been a runner. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a legend. So
that's true.
Yeah. That's the charm about these FKTs, I think. It's the legends.
Yeah.
And
now
we're seeing, you know, there's a website called fastestknowntime.com.
Yes.
Where you can register your FKTs.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do that because I recorded the whole thing with my watch, but I still have to, like, I think I'd have to register like for the first time, this UML track.
Yes.
And maybe put up like my GPS stats will be the official. That's going to be the official track.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Loop or circuit or whatever you want to call it. Okay. So we did that. We came back to Shell 10 and around 10 at night. You slept in a tent. How was it to, how did you feel when you ended the whole thing and you had to go back in your tent?
Well, I didn't go too fast the tent. Well, first thing, I guess I wanted to tell my boyfriend that it was okay and that it went well. And after a big...
So you had to take a phone call?
Yeah. I turned my... I put the Wi-Fi on and talked a bit to my boyfriend. And after big adventures like that, sometimes I've already felt faint. So I also laid down and I put my legs up against the wall.
Okay.
Yeah, for like 5 minutes. I wasn't comfortable, but I'm like, just to do things properly.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really hungry, but I still ate. Because, I mean, it's almost 10 p.m. I'm like, let's get some more calories in before I go to bed. Because my body's going to keep burning some even if I'm sleeping because it's recovering. So I ate some meat and cheese. And then it's just hurry up, get warm and dry. So shower, and I slept with a lot of clothes. I don't know if it was colder last night than usually.
It was.
Okay, because I slept with quite a bit of clothes in my sleeping bag, and I was comfortable. The sleep, I guess I didn't sleep as much, because sometimes I think during our trek, our expedition, I was so focused, very concentrated. All my attention was, you know, stay safe, don't trip, lift your feet, be aware of what's on the ground. All my attention was there. And after doing that for 14 hours, you know, the hamster, the brain is still spinning. So I think I slept, but I woke up feeling rested and feeling like it was maybe, you know, time to start the day. But it was, I think... 2 a.m.?
Yeah, me too. 2 a.m.
Yeah. How was your night?
I was thinking about that because normally I wake up like this in the middle of the night or I struggle to sleep. And I've heard some people from the triathlon world say that the reason is that you've been pumping your body with sugar, like gels and caffeine the whole day, high heart rate and just like high intensity all day. And that's the reason.
Okay.
But in this case, it was pretty low intensity, a lot of hours, and real food.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that couldn't be the case.
Yeah.
I think we can just eliminate that from the reason we can't sleep after big efforts.
Yeah.
That was a good experiment for that. So I think it actually is the brain trying to digest the whole thing. It's such a big... and vast effort, and we saw so many things, and
stimulation,
just tons of stimulation. I mean, as I told you yesterday, my senses were saturated.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, when we reached Shell 10 and the sun was setting and the sky was just purple. You remember that?
Yeah.
I just almost couldn't appreciate it because I just. My brain was just filled up with appreciation.
Wow. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's the reason I can't sleep very good after these kinds of events, because it's just too much to digest.
Yeah. 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 That makes sense. It's, times 100 to what we're used to during a regular day.
Oh, and you did things correctly. You put your legs up. I came back here.
Yeah.
And I had beers.
Oh,
and
they
had a full table with empanadas waiting for me.
Bananas, more
Not bananas, empanadas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know those.
Excellent snack.
And so I just like, okay, when you're in Argentina and you're being served empanadas and beer, you don't turn it down, especially after a long day. And you can be
good calories.
Yeah.
That's after something like that. I feel like having a burger or something that's got fat and meat and something consistent. Yeah. I'll have my vegetables later, but that's perfect.
Yeah, you have. Yeah. What I heard or been reading is the first thing you want to prioritize is calories.
Yeah.
And then you can prioritize the micronutrients.
Yeah.
Calories first and then whatever is in the calories.
Yeah, yeah.
Next.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You're pretty particular about nutrition. Do you have any, like, what do you live by? Do you have any rules or what do you?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I like to
daily routines.
Yeah. I like to keep it simple and eat mostly things that are not transformed. No powders, no pills. So, you know, depends everyone on their grocery stores, but often when I do my groceries, I'll just stay outside of the aisles. You know, there's the meat section, there's the fresh bread section, and the fruits and vegetables. And I really try to put a lot of accent on vegetables.
Yeah.
Not necessarily buy a lot.
Organic.
Organic.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's more expensive, prioritize vegetables, some fruits, nuts, whatever is not transformed and alive. I don't eat a lot of meat. I don't like cooking meat, so I'll cook maybe some beans or chickpeas, lentils, and potato, sweet potato, squash.
Yeah.
And variety. I think variety, color is interesting. And paying attention to how I feel. Sometimes, you know, I find sometimes during a long run, we can have specific, I feel like having chips or sugar. And I think after running so many hours, it's not necessarily an emotional eating. It's maybe our body's giving us a sign that... this is what I need. I need salt. I need sugar, and we feel like a craving for specific food.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess eating healthy and also being careful not to deprive myself. If I want cookies or chips or whatever, I'll have them.
Yeah.
At one point, I used to not let myself have them.
Yeah.
And then it just goes worse. You spend, I don't know, 2 days craving it and not allowing yourself to have it. And then you'll eat a box of cookies.
Right.
And you don't feel good after that.
So no, you don't.
That's emotional eating. So now it's like no restriction. We run so much. I think it's important to eat as we feel and to be aware. I know sometimes after a big day of work, if I'm really fed up... maybe I don't feel like making my salad. I'll feel like having chips. So I'm aware that my eating decision is maybe based on my emotions. So
yeah, this all intertwines with, we had this conversation about meditation, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Taking decisions based on, I don't know, not letting your emotions decide.
Yeah. Staying rational. Yeah. Meditation, I think, is really interesting when you have time. Well, when you have time. We all have time, but I guess it's a choice to put the time there. It's another discipline to the training.
Because I struggle doing it. I don't do it. I prioritize training.
Yeah.
Instead of meditation. But I have time to meditate.
Yeah.
I do have time, but I just like... I don't know. Maybe I just don't want to get into it because I'm afraid of what's going to happen, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. We don't know. For me, meditation is a way to observe myself, to see what's going on in my head. And I find... And meditation for me also means being really in the present moment. And when we're passionate about something, like running or whatever... we are in the present moment. And when we're in the present moment, there's no other thoughts in our head. And that's when we feel so good because I'm not necessarily, I don't know, running and thinking I got to do the response to those emails. That person pissed me off, or I had a fight, or, and then all those thoughts create our mood. So when we're really connected to the present moment, whatever we're doing, cutting vegetables, watching scenery, being with our partner, the more we're connected to it, I guess, or present to it, our mind is completely focused to that. So it's a nice feeling. So yeah, meditation for me is to train my mind to be focused at everything that I'm doing. If I'm talking with someone, if taking my shower, to feel the water on my body and not think, okay, afterwards I gotta brush my teeth, I gotta go put my bed or get changed, oh, don't forget that, and you know, then you're thinking about a whole bunch of other stuff.
Do you ever find yourself in a being with someone, like we are right now, we're having a conversation, and do you think about being present? Do you ever like jinx it? Yeah.
Meaning like
you're get distracted? Now I should be present.
Well, it's yeah.
And then you think about getting being present, and you're not.
Yeah, yeah. I think from what I notice for myself is where the mind goes. Certain subjects I have no interest, and I won't pay attention. But other subjects, I'll remember stuff because it interests me. So like watching the news, I don't ever do that. So I don't know.
You don't?
No, I don't know what's going on in the world.
Is that a choice you made?
I have no interest for that. But when you talk to me about your sister, your niece,
yeah,
exactly, you know, and how you were feeling when you ran a certain race, then I'm interested.
Yeah.
That for me is real.
Yeah.
Hey,
we kind of touched on this outside when we were sitting on the lawn earlier, but like getting into ultra running, and we talked about this yesterday as well. Like, what makes a person go into like an extreme sport like that? And you kind of touched a little bit on this, talking about, you were pretty intense in training after a relationship. And it seems like most people getting into ultra races, they start because of something dramatic in life.
Yeah, a crisis.
Do you agree on this?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
like when I met you, mm-hmm, I was like certain that there's something here.
There's a story behind
the ultra
crazy
runner.
Person.
And that's why I can do these interviews as well. Like, or that's what interests me, because there's always a good story behind the person.
Yeah.
It never fails. Like, of course, you were super nice in the beginning, but I was 100% certain there's something there. Like, there's a reason she's running.
Yeah.
Such a long distance.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have a unhealthy relationship for it, but there's like there was an impetus.
Yeah, to start. Yeah.
What was your impetus?
When I touched a performance at a regional level, and when I was after a breakup, it was really after a breakup that someone I was with, I thought I was going to have children, and he said one day out of nowhere, I'm not in love anymore. So that after that, I guess to valorize myself, I worked so hard for the skiing. I started winning some races.
Winning races in skiing or
in
running?
Skiing. Yeah, in skiing. So you're like, oh, I win. Oh, I like that. You know, the boost is the ego after the ego being shut down from I don't love you.
Oh, yeah.
So then you get it. There's an attachment.
You found a meaning there.
Huh? Yeah.
You found the meaning.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There was created an attachment to I'm winning, or I'm getting positive feedback from this, and it felt good also physically, mentally, on many levels. And then at one point I met another guy. I started dating someone else, And he was normal. He wasn't an athlete. He would run or whatever, but
a normal person.
Yeah, like yeah. More
balanced.
Balanced, exactly.
Yeah.
Balance. Yeah, that's a good word. And that's a hard word, I guess, for people that do ultras, or there's a lot of eggs that go into the training
when
you do an ultra or all of that, those decisions. So, and then I started eating bread and things that I
didn't
let
before.
Myself. Yeah, I didn't let myself eat certain things because I didn't want to gain weight. Wanting to pay my house. So
you had this regime.
Oh yeah,
super
everything
strict regime.
was super strict.
But it worked for performance, or did it?
Yeah, it did. It did. I mean, I didn't go to the Olympics.
No.
But it lasted for maybe 1 or 2 years, and after I got so fed up and
mentally or physically,
because mentally, well, I was tired of being Hitler or of being so
restricting
hard on myself.
Yourself, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
we talked a little bit about this. I have a very similar story.
Yeah.
Just being super strict with myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did you realize it? Because when you're in it, you don't realize it.
I knew at the time I was super strict.
Yeah.
I knew it, but I didn't know how much I was. How much impact it would have on my life.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason I haven't been in a relationship for a lot of years, I guess, because I haven't, because that regime kind of let me not, or
no room.
There's
no space.
Room for another person.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because there's no reason to have a relationship if you're fine with not having a relationship.
Yeah.
Right?
If
you're
exactly.
happy, you're happy.
And balance, you know, to each its own. Everyone's got their own balance. And sometimes when people tell me their balance and they train 18 hours a week, hey, that's their balance. I think it's important to respect everyone's choices. Yeah. We don't have to do it or agree, but respect it is.
Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it. That's your balance.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if whatever, I mean, let's say, what is your boyfriend at the moment? Does he look at your training does he look at your life as a balanced life?
Yeah, I think so. Well, he met me, I was running and he has two kids. He's got more of a normal life, and I really wanted to be with someone, I guess, that would bring me more to those, not an excessive training. He and I like it, because even whatever, if I run 100 kilometers or 10, he's always got the same reaction. He won't think I'm so amazing, or he loves me not because I run. I think he loves me for, you know, maybe more who I am than what I do.
And he likes maybe the running part because it makes you happy.
Yeah,
I
and
guess.
Because we share that also. He runs also, and when I eat properly or when I run, then it motivates him to also do the same.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, it's positive for him.
Awesome. Your work, your post woman.
Yeah.
How would you do? You said you're on your feet about 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's good ultra training.
Yeah.
Do you think about that?
I don't calculate it. Well, when I'm training for a race, I don't calculate that in my hours, because
why not?
It's I take it in consideration, but I don't. I calculate my running time, and that's about it. The other stuff is extra, or it's just part of my life. So I don't run, I calculate more in hours what I run. I don't run 20 hours unless sometimes I've already, I think, done that for a big blast, 26 hours in a week, but I wasn't working just before a race. But or else, it's like a habit of walking. And I think it's really good. It's a good job to recover also after long expeditions, because you continue, you walk and you don't, you know, your legs stay active.
That's
they
a
get
good point.
That's a good point. Oxygenated and...
Yeah, just sitting at a desk is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So later on, we're going to have to go for a walk.
Yeah, we have to. or go up to the climbing gym and play some ping pong.
Yeah, yeah.
You play?
Ping pong. No, I've tried. I've done a bit, but I definitely... I don't know how many exchanges we could have.
We can. I'll take you up there. We can, so you can check out the facilities. Because the 2 days before our expedition, I was there and I did some pretty hard strength training, and I was super sore yesterday when we ran.
Oh, yeah. From your strength training.
Yeah.
Oh,
because I haven't done weights in 2 months, I think.
Yes. Yes. Oh yeah, that's.
And I did deadlifts and.
Wow. Did you feel it while we were going uphill or downhill? Where did you feel? Where were
all
you
the way.
Sore?
All the way.
Okay, you felt it in your...
In every stride.
Quads or...
In my back, mainly.
Okay.
Yeah. And okay. I also did some bench press, so I could feel it in my...
Oh, yeah. That's crazy. That will last... Yeah. The pecs, I find, it can be sore for quite a few days. If I do like 10 push-ups, even on my knees, you know, or whatever, I'll feel my pectorals... a few days later,
because I don't know why, but I started doing a lot of push-ups, and it's not very relevant for running, but I just feel like a more like a overall strong person if I'm strong in my upper body as well.
Yeah, it's I think it's a really good complete exercise, the push-ups. It's, you got the arms in there, the pecs, maybe a bit of the back.
Not so much with the bench press, because you're only using your pecs. But the push-ups, you're using your whole upper body, right?
Yeah.
So that's more transferable, I guess.
Yes.
Okay, so you walk about 5 hours a day. Do you train before and after work as well? Like, do you have a normal...
Well, yeah,
Do you run to work and then you walk and then you run after work?
Yeah.
That's pretty extreme.
Yeah, 1 year for one race, I ran to work. It was like 7 kilometers... or 7 or 8 kilometers to go to work, and then would do my route and then run home another 7 kilometers. I did that a few times, but the last few years it's been more like walking, and then after work then I'll go for a run. But during the week I won't run more than 1 hour or 1.5 hours max. It's more the weekends. No, I'll run... If I'm training a lot, I'll run maybe 5 times a week. Okay. And the obviously the more specific and long trainings or hill work is done on the weekend.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. That's pretty Saturday, Sunday.
Classic, because that's when you have time.
Exactly.
What's your local trail running community like? Do you run with any friends?
Oh yeah. We have Le Courant Nordique. It's a running boutique.
I don't understand. Okay.
The Nordic Runner. Yeah, it's a running boutique that specializes in trail running.
I see your jacket.
Road running, exactly.
Yeah, and your t-shirt.
Yeah, I coach in the club.
You do.
And I'm ambassador for the store. I love the owners. It's a couple that own the store, and they're passionate, and they give so much to the community. So we have free trail running sessions once a week from May to September. So 1 week, and every time, 1 week we're more like in the city, urban trail, and another week, and this the other week, then we alternate, we'll go in real trails around the area. So
what are the trails like?
Yeah, more forest. We're not very much in the open. A lot of forest, so more shade. That I enjoy shade. It makes it so much easier.
It sounds like Oslo.
Yeah. And sounds like Oslo. Roots.
A lot of roots.
And rocks.
Hilly, but no mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not our mountains are 700 meters.
Okay, that's more than Oslo, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about... But we have one guy, he climbed that 700 meters, I think, 21 or 22 times. in 24 hours. So there's possibility to, obviously, like you,
that's an FKT, FKT to yeah. take. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
So, okay, so that's your local playing ground. And it's pretty different to what we did yesterday.
Yes.
How does your body feel now? Because
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised because it helped me so much to have you in front. And the speed you were setting was, wow, so good for me. If you weren't there, maybe I would have, you know, walked more because I was not, I don't know, just to relax. But we finished really well. And today my body, it feels good. And when I go up a little hill, my legs are, they get tired. But I'm not sore anywhere. When I finished the O, I wasn't ready. And I was sore for 2 days. But I noticed more and more we do ultra runs.
Yeah.
The faster the body recovers.
It does.
Really impressive. Yeah. It's impressive how the machine can work.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling today?
Pretty good. As I told you, I have some things with my Achilles. But it's actually, I was a bit worried yesterday.
Yeah.
But today it's perfect.
Okay.
Can't feel anything. So it's
good.
Just an irrational, I wouldn't call it an injury, but a niggle.
It's something, it exists.
It's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you feel when we kind of ran into town and we could see Shelten? You remember that?
Yes.
Last couple of kilometers, we got around the corner and we could see it was getting super dark and we could see the lights of the city.
And the mountains, yeah.
Yeah.
It was really spectacular. I mean...
Describe as best as you can.
Yes. Well, it's cool because we were on pavement. I was running on pavement. So running on pavement, technically, I don't have to look on the ground anymore. I can look up and see the scenery. So you had up front, the road was straight going down. So it made it easier to run, and you could see all the lights of the city coming up, and behind the lights of the city then you had the Fitzroy,
the skyline,
the mountains, and still light enough to see that it wasn't just black mountains, it was snowy mountain or dark rock mountain, and the fact that we were, I guess, a little bit higher than the town, we really got a good view of the valley and seeing the beauty of El Shalten surrounded by mountains. And getting closer and telling myself, okay, don't stop, because or else this guy's going to have to roll you in. Keep going.
All right, so you're going, you're traveling from Shalten tomorrow. Where are you going? Because we haven't talked about that, like your journey. Why are you here and what are you doing?
I'm on a 6-month sabbatical from work that I've been planning for 2 years, and Patagonia's always been, I'm like, wow, that's got to be the kingdom of trail running, got to go see that. So I decided to come for 6 weeks. I started in Punta Arenas, did Puerto Natal, the glacier, El Cafat, and now here. I guess I've been here for just over a week. And tomorrow, take the ferry and go to Villa O'Higgins, back in Chile.
Yeah.
And after that, I don't know. I guess what I like is not preparing too much because I have lots of time. And when I arrive somewhere, I start talking with people, other travelers. They tell me what they've been doing, and I see what's interesting of the place. And
then we have the same approach, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I find it nice to spend, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7 days in one place, to not just one night. I mean, unless it's a transfer, but spend a little bit of time in an area to really get a feel for it and to have an impression, and maybe, you know, connect with people, and that's I find interesting.
So where is your return ticket from?
Santiago.
Santiago. So
March 25th. So I think I got still like 2.5 weeks.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So you'll make your way up there and back to reality, back to work, back yes. as a postwoman.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, every time we travel, we learn things. And sometimes I'll write it down on a paper what I learned or what was really interesting for me, what brought me a lot. And for example, when I came back from Nepal, I didn't have internet. I wasn't on my phone for like 10, 14 days in a row. And I really enjoyed that. And I saw the benefits and I see it here also. So, you know, for example, when I go home, I'll probably try to use internet less, be less on my phone.
Yeah.
So yeah, just, you know, and seeing, having all this time and taking the time to eat or to enjoy a mate or coffee, yeah. To bring that home also, you know, it's all about the state of mind. Being happy here or at home or whatever, it's creating that. So trying to maybe, yeah, remember what we got from our trip.
Yeah. Is that the main takeaway from this trip as well? Like, do you have any other main takeaways that you're going to bring back to Canada?
This one, it's so far, I can't believe I've ran so much or done so many kilometers of trails. So I'm definitely taking that home with me. Maybe I'm going to want to take a break afterwards. And
yeah, you're fed up.
Yeah, well, just do something else, yeah. not just that, or give the body a break. We'll see. We'll see how things present themselves or what it's going to be.
Do you have any races coming up?
No races.
So you can't actually allow yourself to take a break.
Oh yeah, and you know, because I'm not like a professional runner, I don't want to. I've imposed enough on myself. It's not my job.
Yeah,
I've got a job. I have a boyfriend. He's got two girls, my family and friends. That's important also. So, as much as I love running, I want to do it so that I'm having a good time and it's good for me, but not so much that other areas in my life get neglected or not as much attention. So it's the balance of that, you know,
good.
Not having the ego take over and like, okay, well, let's do that race and try to do a performance or that's like, the danger sometimes.
That's the black belt of ultra running, I would say.
Yeah.
Getting past that, I have to do longer, faster.
Yeah.
And just like settling for, yeah, I'm going to let these long races enhance my life or long efforts.
Yeah.
It's yeah. like a long meditation, I guess.
Yeah. And just accepting, you know, accepting that, okay, right now I feel like not training 10, 20 hours a week and this is what I can do. Well, accepting that the result of the training is what it's going to give, you know? That's the biggest thing, I think. If I train a lot, then I'll probably expect more and put more pressure on myself. And also, this sucks, but it's also the image. People, they see you perform at certain races, so they think you're good. And then one day, you know, as I get older and I'm training less, I perform less, you know? You don't... You kind of, it's hard to let go of that image of an athlete that
it is
that you were or that you might associate yourself to. So I think that's a really nice challenge to dissociate myself from being an athlete in my level or in my head. But it's always a concept of how we perceive ourselves.
Yeah, I guess. But it's, yeah, it's all in your head because. If you do good in a race, it's all external pressure that you decide if it's there or not.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the next level, because I when I turn up in a race, I expect myself to podium or do top 10.
Yeah.
And that's just ridiculous. but that's what I expect. So I create this stress on myself.
Yeah, I think. The pressure. Yeah.
That shouldn't be there. And I will do as good as I would anyways.
Without the pressure?
Yeah, I think. I'm not sure, but it's just stress.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But at the same time, we're human. We all have our challenges or way of doing things. I find it interesting sometimes when I talk to people that do a trek and it's going to take them the number of hours suggested, you know. We'll do it in half the time. They'll do it in the full time. And they're super comfortable talking about it that way. As to myself, if I would do it in the full, whatever, 8 hours instead of 4, there's a part of my ego that's like, hey, how come I did it in 8 hours? I don't have to tell everyone about that.
Yeah.
So it's really an ego thing.
I struggle with that actually after pretty much every run.
Yeah.
It's like I tell myself I could have done something better. And then I have this guilt or bad feeling after a training or a race or anything.
Yeah.
It's super unhealthy.
Yeah, but well,
I've always been like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But even more after I started doing ultras, because then you kind of do, it's in the word ultra, right? You do something super or mega or huge.
Yeah.
And then once you kind of see that you can do something huge, you expect something more from yourself every time.
Yes.
So that can, again, like create this unhealthy circle.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a ramble, but I think it's pretty common.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Just being satisfied is pretty hard.
Yeah. I think for every human being.
Yeah.
Maybe us in trail running and other people, often we're not satisfied because we want more. So, you know, to really keep it fun. That's important. So that's why I don't like I don't wear a watch that tells me the kilometers. Yesterday, I barely looked at my watch because I saw you eat, I would eat, or okay, let's eat, you know, that's why I wear a watch, just so
that's awesome.
So I don't spend 3 hours without eating. It's important for me to eat regularly. But so I don't calculate things. I don't calculate, I've got 30, 40, 20 kilometers left, and I'm not focused on the numbers. More really focused on the feeling of, okay, well, just move forward. And okay, there's not much left, so maybe I can push harder. Well, I got no more push, so just move forward.
Yeah. Well, and I think just keeping it fun and keeping the motivation by not doing races but doing FKTs like this.
Yeah.
Is super cool.
Yeah.
That's why I'm gonna do more of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, less races and more FKTs.
Yeah.
And I think the coronavirus will actually create more FKT attempts because people will stay at home or in their own country or in their community and try to get creative and not having to travel across the world to do some epic race or something.
Less expenses and what's fun about what we did yesterday is that not 1,000 people did it.
Right.
So we're discovering something that's kind of, for me, it was kind of like a virgin or, you know, a neutral. That's something not super, people don't know about that trick so much.
Yeah, because we were talking about this, that this should be a race or it could be a race.
Oh, yeah.
But if it became a race, then it wouldn't be so fun doing it. Like we did yesterday, it was like this undiscovered trail.
Yeah.
That should be a race.
Yeah, yeah. A loop,
perfect loop.
Yeah.
But the only thing that could kind of ruin it for a race would be the river crossings, because then you would just stand in line for the zip lines.
Oh yeah.
That could be a fun obstacle, you know. So it would be a challenge to get there first.
Yeah.
Or faster, so you didn't have to stand in line or
yeah.
use that as like a strategic
yeah yeah part. And also what I noticed at the second river crossing is that when I was after I crossed and I'm standing there and it was, you know, getting dark, well yeah. not dark but no more sun, ooh, okay, we can get cold. And I didn't want to take out my jacket because I'm like, we'll start running again. And I did it. But, you know, you can lose energy when you're cold standing there, you know, and it can take maybe 15, 20 minutes. So that's something to take in consideration.
Imagine if the Patagonian weather
come
and yeah. just shit all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, when we were doing our expedition yesterday, you know, at some point I'm like, we're not going back. I don't want to cross that crane wall again and wind and not see the trail. And you know, you're like, we can't go back.
The point of no return.
Yeah. Once after the first, I think 15 or 20 kilometers, it's, to me, it was like, no, we can't really turn back. Mm. I don't even know if it's well, after crossing the first river. Yeah.
Yeah.
I told myself, this is keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Do you want to wrap things up? Should we go for a walk?
Yeah.
Let's go up to that gym.
Yes.
Maybe get some something to eat, I think. Explore Shelten. And I usually ask this question to my, what would you call yourself? Interview object or a conversation partner?
Yeah.
Do you have any tips for the listeners? Like, do you have any, like, I don't know, things you live by or daily routines or something you they can take away from this conversation?
Yeah, I think feeling good, you know, doing what makes you happy and being present to everything that you're doing and what you like less, trying to accept it or just not let it attain us. So that, you know, we can, be more balanced or less in reaction. So being present to what we do and having fun, no matter what we're doing, finding fun, something fun in whatever we're doing.
And do it more?
Yeah, do it more, or, you know, as the feeling goes.
Yeah. All right. All right, thank you for this and thank you for yesterday.
Hey,
it's awesome.
Thank you. I'm so happy we got to do this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Amazing experience.
Yeah. All right, guys. That was episode 91, I think.
Wow.
91. Keeping it going for 100 in 9 weeks, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Then we'll have a big party with all my guests.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. Keep it real, guys. I'll see you in episode number 92. Yeah.
Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.
14 horas. Increíble.
Sí.
Nosotros hablábamos acá. No lo podíamos creer. Sentados en este lugar. El tipo no paraba de correr. Salgan al sol, valientes. Salgan al sol.
In the car, so come on, let's ride to the liquor store around the corner. The boys say they want some gin and juice, but I really don't wanna be a buzz like I had last week. I must stay deep, cause talk is cheap. I like
Alexander, Amish.
And as I continue, you know they're getting sweeter. So what can I do? I really bag you, my lord. To me, flirting is just like a sport. Anything fly, it's all good. Let me simply singing the trumpet. A little bit of
Andreas
in my life. A little bit of
Amette
by my side. A little bit of
Arthur,
all I need. A little bit of
Arvid,
what I see. A
little bit of Oscar
in the sun, a little bit of
Bilal
all night long, a little bit of
Bjorna.
Here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of Erica by my side, a little bit of Rita's all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of Sandra in the sun, a little bit of
Mary
all night long, a little bit of Jessica, here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of
Christian
in my life, a little bit of
Dogana
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Alex
what I see, a little bit of
Fred
in the sun, a little bit of
Mary
all night long, a little bit of Jessica,
Gorm.
Here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of
Erica
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun, a little bit of
Mary
all night long, a little bit of
Jessica,
here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of
Jeffrey
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Johannes
what I see, a little bit of
Johannes
in the sun, a little bit of
Johannes
all night long, a little bit of
Jessica,
here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of
Erica
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun, a little bit of
Mary
all night long, a little bit of
Jessica,
here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica
Christian
in my life, a little bit of
Erica
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun, a little bit of
Margaret
all night long, a little bit of Jessica,
Mariana.
Here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of
Monica
in my life, a little bit of
Erica
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Monica
in the sun, a little bit of
Mary Morten
all night long, a little bit of Jessica,
Morten.
Here I am, a little bit of you,
Nina.
Your name. A little bit of Monica
Ola.
In my life, a little bit of
Erica Ragnar.
By my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Rina.
Sandra in the sun, a little bit of
Mary Robert.
All night long, a little bit of
Jessica, Ruben.
Here I am, a little bit of you,
Ruben.
Your man. A little bit of
Rude
in my life, a little bit of
Sigrid
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun, a little bit of
Sten Erik
all night long, a little bit of
Jessica,
here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of
Stoller.
Monica in my life, a little bit of
Sven Andre
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun, a little bit of
Mary Thomas
all night long, a little bit of Jessica,
Thomas.
Here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of
Puma
in my life, a little bit of
Erica
by my side, a little bit of
Rita's
all I need, a little bit of
Tina's
what I see, a little bit of
Sandra
in the sun,
a little bit of magic Ringa. All night long, a little bit of Jesse, Tyler. Here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. A little bit of Monica in my life, a little bit of Erica by my side, a little bit of Rita's all I need, a little bit of Tina's what I see, a little bit of Sandra in the sun, a little bit of Maven all night long, a little bit of Jessica, here I am, a little bit of you makes me your man. Pleasure to entertain you, bitch.